Following are comments on Thomas Kidd's The Spanish Tragedy, Act 4. Why then I'll fit you, say no more. Hieronymo introduces to Lorenzo and Balthazar his clever idea of staging a play with them as two of the actors and Belimperia as another. In Act 4, Scene 1, Belimperia at first reproaches Hieronymo for not trusting in her accusatory letter, but the two characters bond over the idea of revenge for Horatio's murder. Now they are working together. Hieronymo goes into action with his brilliant device, which is to stage a play. For us, that would be a play within the play, of course, in which the revenge he and Belimperia seek will be carried out in real life. What's more, it will happen right in front of the horrified audience of nobles who have denied Hieronymo his revenge for Horatio's murder. The play is called Solomon and Perseida, which play actually exists, though with somewhat different particulars, and is often plausibly attributed to Thomas Kidd himself. The play within the play is supposed to be acted in four languages: Latin, Greek, French, and Italian. The would-be characters complain that this sounds incoherent, but Hieronymo says he'll be waiting in the wings and will eventually come out and explain it all. For the audience, the New Mermaid's Notes conjecture, there may have been a connection to the famous story about the Tower of Babel in Genesis, where God confounds the speech of the prideful and arrogant men who would rival him by building a tower to the heavens. In any case, it isn't entirely clear how this notion was supposed to be carried out in the play. I will revenge myself upon this place. Isabella finally goes mad and kills herself after chopping down the trees in the family arbor. In Act 4, Scene 2, Isabella finally does away with herself, but not before cutting down the trees in the arbor where Horatio was murdered. Her pleas for justice from the heavens have gone unanswered, and worst of all, Hieronymo, she thinks, has himself abandoned the cause. She dies believing that her husband has fallen into a state of inaction, that he delays to no purpose. Nothing could be farther from the truth, but it's too late to explain that to her now. Quote unquote, I will revenge myself upon this place, she laments, where thus they murdered my beloved son. Lines 4 through 5. On then, Hieronymo, pursue revenge. Hieronymo gives himself a pep talk on the cusp of enacting his final revenge. In Act 4, Scene 3, Hieronymo fusses over the details of the play. This is his moment, and he won't stint on the preparations, even prodding Balthazar to get his act together, since showtime is so near. To end the scene, Hieronymo plucks up his courage yet again. Now Isabella's death can be added to the reasons why revenge is so necessary. It may seem, proleptically, Hamlet-like in Hieronymo to prod himself this way, but when the time comes for action, he won't shrink from the necessary violence. Quote unquote, on then, Hieronymo, pursue revenge, for nothing wants but acting of revenge. Lines 30 through 31. But were she able, thus would she revenge thy treacheries on thee. The horrid play within the play unfolds, and Hieronymo's revenge is soon completed, though he and Belimperia die in its performance. In Act 4, Scene 4, the play within the play is staged. Hieronymo as the Bashaw stabs Lorenzo as Erasto. Belimperia as Perseida stabs Balthazar as Solomon, and then stabs herself. The words she frames her deed with are brilliantly ironic. She says to Balthazar, quote unquote, to thy power Perseida doth obey, but were she able, thus would she revenge thy treacheries on thee. Lines 64 through 66. But of course, this contrary to fact quality of her speech is erased by the brute fact that Belimperia actually stabs Balthazar to death as she says these words. A key difference, by the way, between the play within the play and the actual play, Solomon and Perseida, lies in the way Perseida kills the man responsible for the death of her beloved knight, Erasto. In the play within the play, that role is for Lorenzo. In the actual play, Perseida, Belimperia, disguised and fighting with Solomon, poisons his lips when, having won the match, he kisses her by force. Here, in the Spanish tragedy's version, she will stab him to death, a more direct and male-coded way to accomplish the deed. So far, no one in the audience is catching on. They're praising the skillfully executed fiction unfolding before them. But then Hieronymo drags out onto the stage his dead son Horatio and laments over the gruesome prop as the king, Castile, and the viceroy look on in horror. Hieronymo explains that it was Lorenzo and Balthazar who were responsible for the death of his son Horatio because he dared to love Belimperia. Then Horatio runs away, thinking to hang himself, but he is caught and detained. Threatened with torture by the king, Horatio bites out his tongue, though it isn't entirely clear what more he has to say since the main details are known by now. See the New Mermaid's note to line 201 on page 123. Hieronymo's attitude, the editors seem to suggest, may have to do with wanting to keep his own vengeance uppermost in the noble audience's minds as he meets his fate. Finally, Hieronymo, implausibly enough, manages to get hold of yet another deadly weapon. A knife to mend his pen, with which he stabs both Castile and himself. Why is Castile killed? As the New Mermaid's note mentioned above explains, see page 123, note for line 201, he was the man who denied Belimperia's right to be with Don Andrea. Castile is not responsible for Lorenzo and Balthazar's murder of Horatio, which is why Hieronymo sought the revenge he has already accomplished. Belimperia had her own reason for wanting Balthazar and Castile dead, but since she is now dead herself, perhaps Hieronymo carries out this final revenge to honor his noble accomplice. Yet, he remains the last revenger on the stage. In any case, as the King of Spain points out, the upshot is that Spain's dynasty is now ruined, which to kids' Elizabethan audience would have been a pleasant consequence. These were spectacles to please my soul. Don Andrea at last allows himself to enjoy the outcome of the spectacle he has seen. In Act 4, Scene 5, Don Andrea is finally satisfied, which must be a relief to long-suffering revenge. Some would say that revenge has been trying to delay the whole affair to get Andrea to reconsider, but that doesn't quite fit the scenario. Not counting Don Andrea, 9 characters have died in the Spanish tragedy. And Andrea says ghoulishly, quote unquote, "These were spectacles to please my soul," line 12. What's more, when Andrea suggests that his revenge should continue down in hell forever, revenge is more than happy to oblige, saying, quote unquote, "Though death hath end their misery, I'll there begin their endless tragedy," lines 47 through 48. Reflections on the play's conclusion. Well, Master Kid's play is a messy affair, isn't it? We may be reminded of the scattershot, quote-unquote, special providence that Hamlet claims is watching over every sparrow in the skies, even as innocent and more or less innocent people end up dead along with those who really deserve their deaths. No doubt Hieronymo would insist that he has, indeed, fit or accommodated his noble audience, just as he promised. That is, he has given them an entertainment that observes the gruesome decorum owed to justice, given what the murderers Lorenzo and Balthazar did to an innocent man. It seems as if Don Andrea is going to take delight in creating his own order from the wreckage, punishing the guilty and rewarding his favorites. What does this settle? Kidd seems oddly happy to strip the play's conclusion of a true sense of finality. In all justice, Don Andrea should have been satisfied simply by the death of Balthazar, who killed him deviously in battle. What does Isabella or Hieronymo or Horatio or anyone but Balthazar, have to do with anything, at least where Don Andrea is concerned. But then revenge, be it conceptualized in a classical or Christian context, is in large measure about sangre por sangre, blood for blood. The best case to make for this genre may be Seneca's implied notion of revenge tragedy being something like a homeopathic remedy, watching a fictive representation of ultra-violence as a purgative or cathartic effect on the audience. That's what Aristotle said about Greek tragedy of the non-revenge variety, too. It's a plausible line to argue in defense of the integrity and utility of revenge drama. But then, at least inside the Spanish tragedy, Thomas Kidd allows his characters to kill in earnest. What would Dr. Samuel Johnson say? Johnson, some readers may recall, is the neoclassical critic who wrote in his preface to Shakespeare, quote unquote, "The delight of tragedy proceeds from our consciousness of fiction. If we thought murders and treasons real, they would please no more." Well, Kidd's staging seems to run parallel with that observation. The King of Spain, Castile, before he too is murdered, and the Portuguese viceroy only enjoy Jeronimo's play up until the point where they are informed that their own beloved relatives were actually killed in the course of the action. There is a famous no play by Ziami Motokiyo called Atsumori, in which a warrior named Atsumori obsessively pursues the soldier who killed him in battle. But this man, Kumagai Nojiro Naozane, now turned Buddhist priest and renamed Rensei, which can mean transformation in Japanese, refuses to reenact his role in killing Atsumori. He won't play his part again. The latter then declares that Rensei the monk is not my enemy, quote-unquote, and prays for release so he can move on. Atsumori chooses to embrace change, therefore, instead of taking his long-sought vengeance. Even though forgiveness and turning the other cheek is certainly part of Christian doctrine, we would not expect an Atsumori-like embrace of transformation from Thomas Kidd's protagonist, Jeronimo, not in this genre anyway, with its dedication to curing what ails us by means of ultra-violent romps. Finally, what proto-Shakespearean interests can we find in this play? A willingness to use art to explore philosophical and moral big questions, to be or not to be. An interest in the relation between humanity and God, or the gods. The difficulty of revenge, whether for internal reasons or external ones. Frustration awaits the revenge hero thanks to the power and corruption of others in high places. This also means that revenge tragedies often give us a depiction of unhealthy societies, so an interest in statecraft enters the picture. The King of Spain isn't so much evil as oblivious, but that's dangerous too. Then there's the play within the play, as a device to reveal the truth. So this shows there's an interest in the relationship between art and other areas of life. Finally, Machiavellian characters who represent a certain kind of thinking, an effectual amorality. It usually turns out to be a trap in the end. Delusional thinking, as Rodri Lewis says of tragedy generally in his book Shakespearean Tragedy. People have ideas that don't correspond to reality, and that causes them and others trouble. The expectation that dastardly crimes will make us safe, well, that's delusional. Also somewhat delusional is the touching desire on Jeronimo's part to continue thinking of justice when it's clear that no such thing will ever be on tap. We may be reminded of Shakespeare's ultra-Roman general, Titus Andronicus, arguably the ultimate Roman in the play Titus Andronicus. Once he awakens from his ideological fantasy of what Rome is, he ends up out-barbarianing the barbarian Goths and Aaron the Moor. Thanks for listening. The date of this audio recording is Friday, June 13th, 2025. The foregoing material is copyright 2025 by Alfred J. Drake. Quotations are from the 2009 New Mermaids 3rd edition of Kidd's The Spanish Tragedy.